wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall.
You're listening to Tides Morning Talk with Steve-O. Welcome. This is WLOB 1310 AM, Kodachrome, part of my memories. Something about photography, Deb.
Oh, yeah.
You know I love it.
I do.
That's why we're excited to have our guest today, Meg Weston. Meg is the president of the Maine Media Workshops in College. Welcome, Meg.
I'm glad to be here.
You guys are known as doing the best work, not just in photography. Photography is obviously a core element, but all types of media and capture and digital and video. And I've been wanting to get up there for so long. I just don't know if my my level of photography is worthy. So I wanted to have you in here to talk about the work that you're doing, which I think is great. And we often focus on education in Maine. And sometimes people just look at education as secondary in terms of, you know, liberal arts or going to a four-year college, but I view it as all kinds of education, whether it's vocational or whether it's hobby or whether it's business. And the education that you do is dynamic. It involves new economy stuff and digital stuff. So very excited to have you here.
Well, it's what they call experiential education because you get your hands on and do it.
Right.
And that's really fun and it's creative. And we teach for students of all levels. So from the very beginners who don't know how to use a camera to people that are practicing artists and professionals in their field that want to get to the next level in their career or in their work, in their creative work. So you showed me some of your photographs. You are absolutely worthy.
Oh, well, thank you.
You've been doing it for a long time. But what we find is that sometimes people who've been doing it for a long time come to get that shot in the arm, that inspiration to learn something new, to push their boundaries a little bit.
Well, it's an interesting combination, especially in the digital age, of both art and science. And I want to talk about those two dimensions. But before we get too far into Maine Media Workshops, I'd love to just talk briefly about you and how you ended up coming to Maine and how you ended up joining the Maine Media Workshops in college. And then we'll talk about what is offered up there in the history. And then we'll talk about photography and various things here in Maine, if that's all right.
That would be great.
So how did you end up in beautiful Maine, living in beautiful Rockport, Maine?
Well, beautiful Maine. I came to Maine in the 70s. I think I came, well, when I was a kid, I came to Maine on vacation, but I came on my honeymoon in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
I was got married, and we decided that this was the place we wanted to live. And so we just sort of picked up and moved to Maine. I was in school in Montreal at the time, studying communications at Loyola College, and decided that this was where we wanted to be, and have not left because I love it here.
Perfect. And how did moving here, how did you first become introduced to the media, Maine Media Workshops in college?
So I came to Maine Media Workshops in college in the early 70s for a class. Back then, I was interested in photography. I had studied photography in college, and I wanted to take a workshop. And the funny thing about that story is my father gave me, we had just bought a house, a camp on the Saco River, and needed to winterize it, didn't have running water. And my father gave me some money to bury the water lines that went to the river. And I spent it on a workshop instead and spent 2 weeks up in Rockport, loved every minute and never regretted carrying water in by sled all winter long to that little camp.
Wow.
I was a lot younger then, but I really never regretted that. It was an investment in something that was just magical.
So was it photography itself that drew you personally in terms of taking the class?
Yes, yeah. At that point
and
in
back
time.
At that back point, then. It was film, obviously. So
it was film, it was black and white.
Kodachrome.
Kodachrome, yeah. I was black and white photographer back then, and And they really pushed my boundaries a little bit. I didn't take pictures of people, and somebody said, you know, go out, take some pictures of people. And I hitchhiked from Rockport to Rockland, not very far, and the people that picked me up, you never would have wanted your daughter to take a ride with them. But I got some great shots, and it's not my first subject area today, but I certainly learned from pushing my edges a little bit. And that's what I tell people when they come in every Sunday night for a workshop in the summer. I said, this is a place you can take some risks and do that, because that's where you learn.
But both in terms of the photography and the, what's being taught up there, but if you're in a creative environment like there, that is almost communal, that's the fertile environment where you can take risks. You can talk to other students, talk to other teachers, professors, visiting photographers. And I got interested in photography, I don't know, 40 years ago when I grew up outside of Boston and Polaroid was based off of 128. And we had this Polaroid camera that had like four buttons on it. It was supposed to be simple, but the early ones, you had to pull something down, you pull something out. And I was fascinated that a Polaroid camera could produce something fairly instantaneously. And it was like each picture was its own little development kind of process. And then after that, got a little bit involved with film photography. And talk a little bit about what that was like for you in the 70s, because most people now can't really relate to developing pictures. Most people now are obviously the digital age has kind of swept over the landscape. There are still some people that shoot with films, still some people that shoot full frame and they process their own. But back in the 70s, there were a lot of people that shot film and also went into dark rooms and processed. And then the decade after, a lot of people went to one-stop photo development kiosks, and all those things are now obsolete. But what was it like when you started getting involved, for your experience?
Well, I would just say one of the funny things about that is we teach everything from historic processes that were used in the 1800s in the early days of photography.
Wow.
And so we teach tintypes and collodion process and cyanotypes and all of those things. And we're just building a new studio darkroom for teaching those. Everything from that to the latest digital technologies. And these are not all within my lifetime, but within the last couple of hundred years, this is what photography has been. In my lifetime, as you said, lots have changed. And that magic of watching an image develop, that latent image in the tray as you're rocking the tray in the darkroom, is not something that many people have the experience of today. But what we're seeing is a resurgence of interest. Our young artist program for high school age teenagers, the first classes to fill up have been the darkroom classes.
Wow. Because it's an experience? It's something a little more engaging than just pulling out a digital camera and taking a picture? Or what's the interest?
It is. And many of them are, you know, photography is so prevalent in their lives that they either want to take it to the advanced level in a DSLR camera and learn all the ins and outs of shooting and lighting and taking a great photograph, or they really want to get their hands in it and do something unique and that they feel that they've crafted, not just shot their friend in a selfie or their own friends with their iPhone camera. So
fascinating. We have Meg Weston here in the studio. She is the president of Maine Media Workshops in College. Deb, you're a bit of an amateur photographer too, aren't you?
Very, very amateur, yes.
Well, how amateur? Point and shoot? What's your level
point
of...
Point and shoot. I like landscapes.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. There's just something artful about it to me.
It's
almost like a canvas, you know, and to be able to snap it instead of take the time to paint it, to me, is good.
Well, you'll have to bring in some of your landscape
yeah.
thing. Meg, if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about, for people that may not be familiar, why don't we start with describing Maine Media Workshops? You brought in a catalog. Obviously, there's much more information online at www.mainemedia.edu. But for somebody who may not be familiar, like somebody who's listening today, and they may say, God, I vaguely have heard of Maine Media Workshops, give an overview of both what the curriculum, what the typical students are. And in the summer, I know you have summer programs where people go up there and they stay for a week or 2 weeks or a month. And so talk a little bit about just an introduction to people and what Maine Media Workshops is in college is all about.
Sure. That's a big ask, one that I'm really glad to talk about. I'm excited about it.
I want to go myself, so sure, let's go.
So first of all, our mission is that we educate and inspire visual artists and storytellers, and that's broad range. We teach photography from historic processes to the latest digital technologies. We teach filmmaking, and again, we'll teach film, we teach video, we teach everything from you've never made a movie before and you want to make a movie, or you want to know what's involved in making a movie, to people that are professionals out there working and they want to learn Steadicam, they want to sit with a master director of photography from Hollywood and learn how to do that. They want to learn directing or screenwriting. We teach design and book arts. In book arts, we teach the historic parts of crafting a book by hand, and we teach e-publishing. So the broad range of what we do is what makes it unique. The other thing is the age range. We have young artist programs in the summer for 8 weeks, targeted to high school students, where they come for 2 weeks at a time and study photography or filmmaking or some combination of the two. And then we have students that come from all ages. We've had students there in their 70s, 80s, 90s. One of my favorite quotes, we ask people to write something in an evaluation, and one woman in her mid-70s, I think, said, you know, I've been an artist all my life, and I was feeling tired and discouraged. I came here for a week, and I'm ready to go out and take on the world.
That's fantastic.
And so that's, you know, people come, they eat meals together, they talk with people that are coming there from all over the world. They listen to evening lectures from the faculty that are teaching, even if that's not the course they're in. They meet people that are studying other things. So you may be interested in landscapes or in the environment like you are, Deb. And you may be taking a photography course around that, and somebody else is making a film about that subject. And you look at it from a whole different angle or a different media form. And that's what happens. But that happens during our workshop season, which has just started now. We have a spring season. We get into very busy mode June through October, running 1 week and 2 week workshops. And then what we have what we call our long-term programs. You can come for a 4 week film school or a 12 week cinematography and intense learning segment, or you can do a photography residency for 12 weeks in the summer, or you can come for 9 months of the year, starting in September and leaving in May, in for our professional certificate program.
I want that one. Yeah, that one
sounds
good.
That's terrific.
That sounds great. It's going to be a challenge explaining that to my wife, Katie, that I'm going away for 9 months with the businesses we have here. I don't know if they would miss me. But that would be immersive. That would be...
Immersive program is exactly what that is. But we also have a low residency program, which is a Master of Fine Arts degree program, where students work on mentored projects in between. They come for a retreat, critique community. Then they might stay for a week-long intensive in one subject area. And then they're working with a mentor on their creative or academic projects. And that's a 3-year degree-granting program.
Well, describe the campus a little bit, being based in Rockport, which is obviously scenic and iconic in itself in terms of the area up there. But what is the campus and kind of the structure of the school? How many faculty are there? And then talk a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, about kind of the business structure. Is it a private college workshop? Is it tied in at all directly or indirectly to the main university system? And give a little bit of an overview in those areas.
Sure. We're a nonprofit to start with. We became a nonprofit in 2007. And so in our mission is to educate and inspire visual artists and storytellers, and we do that through offering workshops, classes, degree, and long-term programs. We offer a lot of scholarships whenever we can, and our programs are open to people in the community as well. And we do free talks every Monday and Tuesday nights for the community that are open to the community. So basically, that's the business structure of it. In terms of the setting, I think there are very few more beautiful places in the world than Rockport, Maine. It's gorgeous harbor, the Camden Hills behind you. So people get out and they shoot in the mid-coast. They're out on the water. They're out in the mountains. They're just a beautiful, beautiful setting. We have about 10-acre campus there. We have housing on campus or in the community. And we serve meals 7 days a week. So you're sitting together under the tent eating your meals. Every Friday night is a lobster dinner and a show of the student work. So
I'm in. This keeps getting better and better.
You can't beat that.
Dinner.
I'm there.
Dev is in. Shani's in. We're all in. We're sold.
The other question you asked about are whether we're connected with the university system. We're working very hard on collaborative ventures right now. We're working we've been talking with the University of Maine, and we work with the University of Maine in Augusta. But we have a collaboration that we're launching this year with Husson University.
Great.
That's a master's in education with a concentration in media arts that's targeted to media arts educators in high school, technical schools, community colleges that want a graduate degree in education. Husson's delivering the education programs. We're delivering the media arts components of that program.
Well, fantastic. Why don't we continue the discussion about photography, only because, you know, that'll be my own personal indulgence, because I love photography. You're accomplished also personally in the area of photography, and from my notes here, it shows that you have a particular passion that's a little bit unique. You know, Deb mentions landscapes, and I do different types of photography. I've never met anyone who had a particular passion in photographing volcanoes. It shows here that your work has been showcased in exhibits, in group shows, as well on your website, which is www.volcanoes.com. First of all, how lucky of you to get that URL.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, out of all the URLs, you have www.volcanoes.com.
Yeah.
I don't know how big the volcano community is, but there's somebody out there going, darn it, Meg has volcanoes.com.
I know.
Talk a little bit about, for you personally, because I think it's kind of interesting, how you became interested in such kind of a niche area of photography like volcanoes.
Volcanoes.com was given to me as a birthday gift in the early days of the internet, because I've been fascinated by volcanoes all my life, since I was a very little girl. And
wow.
The Surtsey Island erupted off the coast of Iceland on my 12th birthday. So that was a birthday gift, too.
Wow.
That's my passion. And whenever I can, I'll travel to photograph that. My background's really been on the consumer business side of photography, and this has been my avocation.
Well, I know. At one point, you were president, COO of the U.S. photo finishing operations of Konica, which was a huge company. For a number of years, you were president of the Portland Press Herald, which I want to talk about journalism a little bit. But I can't get away from volcanoes, because I can't think there's a must be a lot of competition for people like specializing. Have you ever been to Maui and Mount Haleakala? That is a volcano. Or?
Yeah, I have been to Haleakala. I go almost every year or every other year to Kilauea because it's since it started, it's been continuously erupting since January 3rd, 1983.
I'm guessing, without getting too technical, when you're photographing volcanoes, you want to go telephoto. You don't want to get too close, right? Or do you like jump into the volcano close to the lava and get the excitement and the red and the lava flow? Or
I like to get as close as I can and get the red lava flow. So, but I go where it's relatively safe to do that. So those effusive lava flows, not the huge pyroclastic eruptions, are what I like to photograph. And so sometimes I've been as close as you and I are sitting across from each other, about 3 feet away.
That is, I've gone to Maui a number of times, and you go up there typically if you want to see the sunrise at 3 a.m, and it's just stunning and just beautiful. We have Meg Weston here. She's president of Maine Media Workshops and College. Talk a little bit about the evolution from film to digital. And I distinctly remember at one point having a Minolta camera that was film, and it was 35 millimeter. You had the little disc. You put it in. You wrapped the film around. But it was challenging for somebody who was not really experienced in, at that point, SLR photography, because you would have to put in the variables. You would have to put in the aperture. You'd have to put in the shutter speed. You'd have to put in the ASA film speed. And then you would take a picture. And then after you hit the shutter, you would think, well, I'll see how this turns out in a few days. There was no instant. There was no screen in the back. There was no digital readout. There was no instantaneous sense of, oh, I need to change one of the settings. In many ways, I'm sure it made photographers much more focused on every shot, because not only did it cost you something for every picture you took, both in the film and the developing, but it you know, if you missed a moment, you missed it forever. Whereas in digital, the technology is so advanced, even on the top-of-the-line cameras or on PDA cameras, you can hold down the button and take a bunch of pictures, get feedback. And so talk about the period that has evolved from film into digital, and then we'll talk a little bit about the future of digital, and will film become as obsolete as the 8-track, or do you think there'll always be some people just hanging on to film?
Wasn't that some of the fun of film, was that anticipation and
right.
not knowing? And I think that's why many people are going back to it.
And then you got the pictures back and you were like surprised. It was like,
right.
Oh my God, I got this unbelievable picture.
I remember watching people when I ran Konica and the photo finishing, that they would pick up their films from our store, some of them, and then they'd go sit in their cars and they wouldn't go anywhere. They'd open those envelopes and look at their pictures because
right, right.
they couldn't wait to see what came out. So there was that kind of different excitement to it. For myself, I really did enjoy shooting black and white, but color, especially color slides, required a level of precision that I didn't do often enough to get that feedback loop. So I loved digital when it came out. At Konica, we were one of the first to introduce consumer digital photographic products, like
wow.
your pictures on a floppy disk, if you remember.
Right, right,
floppy
right.
disk. And so it was very exciting to me to get that instant feedback that you get with digital. But you still, when you take a great picture, you still want to be able to control those aspects of shutter speed and aperture and framing and distance. And, you know, I took Jim Nicholson teaches a night landscape photography class,
oh, wow.
and I took it last fall. And this week, today's the last day, they've been shooting a winter night landscape class. Beautiful, beautiful images. It's a highly technical type of photography to know.
Long shutter speeds.
Right,
you've
got to
get the depth of field because of the foreground light and the reflection off the snow, which is the contrast is unbelievably challenging.
And do you want star trails or pinpoints of stars, and how do you capture the moon? And, you know, I mean, there are very technical aspects, and then but it's really not about the technology. It's about what do you want to say? What do you want to express? What story do you want to tell?
I know. Just before we came into the studio, you and I were talking. One of my friends, John Isaac, who is a world-renowned photographer, and I believe he shot for National Geographic and a number of national publications. He was a photographer, I believe, with the UN.
Yes.
Going into some areas where there were a lot, it was more photojournalism in capturing a lot of hardship, a lot of strife. But he's also moved on to doing different, he comes to Maine and he has this series of puffin photographs, which are unbelievable. He gave me a signed one a couple of years ago, and all kinds of animals. And he's always traveling around the world. And I met John when he was working with Olympus cameras, and my agency was doing work with Olympus. And he was such a master at photography that we would shoot, and we would go to the U.S. Open, and we'd go to different events. And I would say, John, what are your settings here? And I would try to dial in the same settings. He goes, well, I'm going to go for a shutter speed of, 1/500th and it's light. And I'm going to go for this aperture, and I'm going to go to F8. And I would dial them in, and I would take five pictures. He would take five pictures, and they would look nothing alike. And I think that applies to almost every art, whether it's music or writing or visual arts, that some people have a sense and a feel that goes beyond the technology. And that's why no matter how advanced cameras get, I think there will still be a role and appreciation for people that are advanced like that.
That's why the media arts are arts,
right?
Is that you're unique. You can take a whole class of 10 people out there in the same setting and say, okay, shoot, and you're going to get 10 different views, 10 different expressions of that moment, of that scene. And that's because it's what's behind the camera that counts.
Right. He was so good that once I took just a little bit of Vaseline and I put it on his lens without him seeing. And then we took...
You did not.
You're right. That would be like a sin of photography. And we both shot, and his were blurry, and mine were good. And it was like, John, what's up now? But he's, and I think he's taught courses up
he
at the
Maine. He teaches every summer, and he does a wonderful lecture that's open to the public when he's teaching. If you haven't taken one of John's classes, you should, because he's a wonderful, wonderful teacher. And his talk that he does has you in tears.
Right. I mean, he's all over Africa, Antarctica.
Yeah.
He's been everywhere.
And some very difficult war situations and situations around the world. And he has such a big heart and a wonderful way of touching humanity. So many of our instructors do. Peter Turnley is another one who teaches for us in Maine and teaches all over the world, in Paris, in Sicily, in Mumbai. And he is a street photographer and just has this way of relating to people,
right?
And teaches you. You know, it's all about helping you develop your art form. That's what a great teacher does. They don't teach you how to do their art form. They teach you how to do your art form.
Talk a little bit about celebrity photographers and their place in culture. And two names come to mind. One is Ansel Adams. It feels like almost anyone that is into kind of architectural, not photography, but displays of photography will have a black and white of Ansel Adams of some landscape or the Grand Canyon or something that is. And for him, in his style, which was years and years and years ago, it was really a mastery of light and contrast in light. And then Annie Leibovitz, who's another iconic figure that's still shooting. I think she came into acclaim in the 70s doing a lot of work for like Rolling Stone and bands. And she did, I think, the John Lennon, Yoko iconic pictures. And she's done a lot of lifestyle stuff. But will we still see those types of, not celebrity, but those types of media photographers now that we're full into the digital age? Or was there just something in a period of time with Ansel Adams and Annie Leibovitz that were just, they were unique talents?
So absolutely. When you first said celebrity photographers, I thought you meant those who photographed celebrities. And it came to mind Doug Kirkland, who's teaching this summer for us, who's photographed so many celebrities.
Is he a paparazzi guy? Is he one of the people they hate?
He's not a paparazzi. He's one that relates to them and takes great photographs.
But he doesn't chase down the Kardashians.
No.
He's not camped out at Beeb's house.
That's not. We don't have those teaching there.
Perfect.
But we do have, you know, Marco Grobe, who teaches for us, is one of those that is known throughout the country today. And is one of what we would call celebrity photographers. Joyce Tennyson, who's taught for us for years, and, you know, her books are out there in so many people's living rooms that I've seen. She's just a wonderful, wonderful teacher involved with the school and teaches every year. We've certainly had many of those names, as you say. Are there as many names today? I think so. I think you and I don't know who they are because you know that by hindsight, but certainly some of the ones, Greg Heisler, who teaches for us, has just published a new book and is a phenomenal photographer. He's got a class running this summer. We've got Sam Abel and Arthur Meyerson teaching this summer. We've got some new photographers. Stephen Laxton, who won the Arnold Newman Prize, is teaching this summer. His photographs were shown at our gallery in Portland a couple of months ago, the Faux Pas Gallery that's here in Portland. And he did these images of circus personnel in El Salvador that are very, very moving. Jennifer Schwartz is teaching this summer. She's one of these people who really teaches you about the business of photography, how to get your pictures in the market in today's world using social media, using other forms. So it's very exciting that there are people out there today who are making a living in very different ways and getting known with their photography in very different ways than necessarily the Ansel Adams of the world or whoever.
But he was pretty good, right? I mean, given the state of the technology back then, and I don't even remember the type of camera he had, but it was a big boxy thing with a hood, and he sat out there all day for 10 hours, and when the light hit the mountain and the rock, he snapped.
It's a view camera.
Yeah,
of course. He's one of the masters in our field, and so many people don't study the history of photography anymore. Obviously, you're interested, you have. You learn a lot by looking at those folks and looking at their work.
But they're not only snapshots, not in the literal sense, but they're not only capturing an image, but in great photography captures a spirit and a moment in time in our culture and society. And so there's obviously the content of the image, but great art and great photography takes you to the period, to the emotion, to the feeling, and it doesn't just record the pixels of the content.
Yeah, there's more to it than a picture postcard.
There's a feeling.
There's
a feeling, and it's intangible, but I'm sure that when people take courses at Maine Media Workshops in college, you make it tangible or you try to convey the sense of how to do it. But some of it falls into the category of pure art. And so you can take a music course and somebody can teach you technical chord progressions, or you can take a painting course and somebody can show you shades and how oils interact with the canvas. But some people are just maestros. And I believe that also applies to digital photography and filmmaking and all the arts that you teach up there at your school.
I think everybody's creative. And what form your creativity or chooses to take depends on your choices that you make and how you want to apply yourself. So it's not about the technology. It's about what you want to say, what story you want to say, and then learn those skills that you need to express it. And the great teachers pull out both from you. They teach you the technique that you need. Because without it, you can't say right. what you want to say. But they also pull out of you, what are you trying to do here?
Well, we're in 2014. And so this is an interesting point in history, I think, in terms of digital capture and photography. And I do want to move on to other subjects, too, because you teach more than just photography. But that's obviously your core curriculum. About 20 or 30 years ago, when film... modern day film and film processing was at its peak, there was a universe of people that were active in film photography. So there was a barrier of entry for some people, whether it was cost or whether it was technology. So there was a universe of people that would consider themselves photographers, and they would buy a Minolta or a Nikon or Konica. They would buy the technology, they would buy the film, they would have the different film speed for different use, they'd plug in shutter and aperture and all that. Then digital started morphing in the last 20 years, and the barrier of entry got smaller, where, you know, the first point and shoots were like 1 megapixel, and there wasn't a lot of data, there wasn't great technology, but in the last 20 years, that's advanced. But in the last 5 or 10 years, iPhones and PDAs represent a new generation of capture. I have a hypothesis, and the hypothesis is that 10 or 15 years ago, right in the sweet spot of where DSLR cameras were really coming on, people started getting energized about digital photography because you could take a picture, you could process it in the camera, you could download a simple version of Photoshop or some simple digital processing thing, change the picture a little bit, the color, the contrast. But now that iPhones and PDAs are so prevalent, I fear that there will be a downturn in real photography because so many people now use their iPhones and their Samsung phones and all the different PDAs. And to a vast majority of the public, to them, that's photography. That's adequate. They can get the picture. They can go to the birthday party. They can get a picture of their friend. They can do a selfie. And because it meets most of their needs, there may be some disinterest engaging in a higher level of photography like DSLR. Do you see that? And is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And how do you see today's digital photography relative to the art of photography in the future?
I think that's always been true, that there's the consumer, general consumer, who wants to capture those pictures of their kids and as they're growing up or their events of their lives. And they were using point and shoots, or they were using the instant, you know, film camera, the throwaway cameras, whatever. That market has gone away. I mean, the point and shoot camera market has totally disappeared. That's been replaced by your iPhone or your cell phone. And eventually, I was just hearing on the radio the other day about this camera that you wear that shoots a picture every minute or whatever of your life.
That's funny.
That you are wearing this camera that's recording your life. That's a little scary to me. But then there's always been this other segment that wants to do more with it, that wants it as an art form. And so I think that there are more pictures being taken today than there ever have been in the history of the world.
Right. But they're not being processed. They're being taken.
They're not being printed. They're not being processed. But imagery has become such an important part of how we communicate that I honestly believe that's feeding more people to think about what else do I want to do to tell that story, to use imagery to tell my story. So it may be in forms that you and I haven't imagined yet.
Right.
It may certainly be in these convergence of forms that some still and some video and some e-publication with text. But I think that there, I'm an optimist. I think the more pictures that are being taken in every form, the more people that will want to advance in that and learn more.
You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. We have Meg Weston here. She is the president of Maine Media Workshops and College. We'll shift just a little bit. In the late 90s, you were president of Portland Press Herald. So you were very involved with the oversight or the business of the paper, not necessarily the editorial side, because I'm sure there was separation. But talk a little bit about photography and photojournalism back from your perspective as a photography executive and now as a leader of an academic institution. People have, obviously, photojournalism is in many cases, daily newspapers are facing all kinds of budget problems. Do you see an evolution, and do you see this being a great period for digital capture? Because now many stories that traditionally would just be in the paper are online. Many reporters are carrying PDAs, so they videotape interviews or get audio interviews. So it feels like the content of journalism is becoming much more enriched and multidimensional. And from your perspective as a former president of a major, you know, largest newspaper here in Maine, talk a little bit about where you see photojournalism.
Well, you've put your finger on it in that people are expected to do more. Like in every business, photojournalism and journalism, they're expected to be multimedia professionals and not just a still image and not just a writer and not just a videographer in many cases. So one of the things that we do is try to target some of our classes to that one-man band because you're not going to come at it, or if you've been in the business for a long time, that's not going to be your strength. But you do need to know that. Our professional certificate, which used to be either a professional certificate in photography or in video or in multimedia, is now in visual storytelling. Because we know that whatever our graduates are going to do, whether they want to be photojournalists, whether they want to be working in a business, whether they want to be fine artists, wherever they want to go with their media arts, and typically they are photographers to begin with, they're going to need skills in multiple areas. They're going to need to know how to record audio and video, how to edit that, how to put together a multimedia presentation. And so that's what we teach them. So that
it just
they're
keeps
prepared.
Getting more complex, like high dynamic range. Then you look at Photoshop, Creative Suite 5. It kicks my butt. Every time I open it up, there's like 500,000 controls.
Well, first of all, you need to take class. Dave,
I need
okay?
to. I know this, but,
but
my
secondly,
head explodes.
And maybe firstly, maybe. You need to know what are you trying to do with it, because you're not going to learn it all for the sake of the technology. You're going to learn the technology for the sake of what you're trying to do. So you don't need to learn everything that Photoshop does.
But here's the problem, Megan. This goes way beyond photography, but for me personally, yeah, I've obviously am very involved in photography. And just as you were able to secure www.volcanoes.com in the early days of the land grab for URL, I secured stevo.com, which is my photography site, which isn't as cool as volcanoes.com, but I like it. We have so much technology in our lives every day. And up at Maine Media Workshops, because it's part of the curriculum, you deal with it every day. You evolve. You have instructors and faculty. But when I jump in my car and my GPS thing wants me to plug in something, and then I get to my office and I've got a Bluetooth headset that has to be paired with something else, and then I turn on my computer and I try to make a phone call, but my phone is integrated into my Outlook, and then I go home and try to heat something up in the microwave that's supposed to be talking to the refrigerator. And then I want to just, all I want to do is watch you know, NCIS, either LA or the Washington version with Mark Harmon, which is obviously the classic. And the Time Warner cable box wants me to do something else, and the remote has 9 functions. And if I just want to wake up, my alarm has 42 different varieties of music and matching. I go to sleep, and the technology is ringing in my ears. And I don't think we're ever going to go backwards, because I think that's progress. But I love the process of taking images and processing them a little bit. But the wave of technology is, and maybe it's just me, maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe young folks like Deb are much more adept at it. But Deb, how do you do
it
with technology?
No, it's the same thing.
Is it me? I'm overwhelmed.
Everywhere you go, every part of your day, you've got technology that you have to deal with. You're right.
But it's not just deal with. Like if you're not integrated into the technical world, you're falling behind.
Yes.
And it's intense. My youngest child, Zach, is 13, mm-hmm. and he'll zip around on the Xbox or this or ride the Segway or program something. And should I give up?
No,
I shouldn't give up.
No, don't give up. But you know, one of the things I tell students when they come in on Sunday nights, if they're there for a week, I say, turn off your cell phone.
Right.
Turn off your email. You have given yourself a gift to take this week to just immerse yourself in your art. So you may want to learn a specific technology in that week. Take away all the rest of the distraction. You're here in the most beautiful place in the world.
Right.
Your cell phone may not work all that well anyway.
That's funny.
And just be here and be present with one thing. And one thing is a real gift in today's world to be able to do that.
I agree. I mean, I wish we could all disable our cell phones for certain periods of the day. It's so pervasive and so integrated in
our
lives.
But you can. You make that choice.
I'm not strong enough. Thank you, Meg. I'm just not. Thank you. I know you said.
I don't do it. I know you said hypothetically.
You can. I can't. If something's happening in Twitter and I don't look at it, I'm missing something. If all of a sudden, I mean, my phone has 4,000 things going on. And speaking of which, I should plug your website, mainmedia.edu. Also, speaking of Twitter, the Twitter feed is at MMWorkshops for information. In the last couple of minutes that we have here, Meg, your background is certainly rooted in some very, very high-level business accomplishment. President and CEO of University of Southern Maine Foundation, president of Portland Press Herald, President, Chief Operating Officer of the U.S. Photo Finishing Operations for Konica, President, CEO of an Israeli digital imaging startup called PrintLife, and now you're President of Maine Media Workshops and College. So there's a combination of art through many of these things that have been defined your professional life, but an awful lot of business. If you could talk in the next couple of minutes of what is the business of visual arts, you know, not the art, not where people are doing it because they want to produce something beautiful, but in Maine we have a relatively underpowered economic engine, and for some people looking to take classes, it's about transferring those skills and monetizing them in terms of business and growth, whether it's movie making or photography. Talk about some of the business future of what's being taught at Maine Media Workshops in College.
Well, I'd like to talk about that, and I also want to talk about the filmmaking part of our program, because it's at least half of what we do in growing, and we've talked a lot about photography.
Right. That's because it's my selfish interest.
And I know that's what you're interested in, but so many professionals come to us to advance their skills in filmmaking.
Right.
And there's huge opportunity, whether it's episodic TV or whether it's independent films, whether it's Hollywood-style films. There are so much. It's a burgeoning industry across the country and around the world. We get students in from South America, from mm-hmm. India. And so that's what I would say.
There's a demand for content. There's so much outlets. There's so many satellite outlets, channel outlets, movie, that people need content.
And they need content. They need skills. They need those video skills and those filmmaking skills. So I would say from a business aspect, yes, there are business aspects to the photography that we teach, but a lot of people are interested in that for more of the art and personal satisfaction. But people come to us to learn filmmaking really on a career path.
Okay, and in terms of jobs in Maine, what does the local economy look like for opportunities for people that you've seen in terms of people who have gone through your programs? Wedding photography is kind of a natural thing because we have a very scenic location, but it obviously goes way beyond that. But what are some of the applications you've seen?
Maine has always been a small business state, and I think that creative people are entrepreneurial. So the jobs are entrepreneurial jobs. So when I see people that come through us, they're working as freelancers or they're working in their own video production businesses, or they're working with each other people on video production. There are jobs as multimedia producers out there because every business, every nonprofit needs to use media to get their message out.
So from web development, I mean, right now it's everywhere. You know, if you have a phone app, you need to have content. If you have a website, you need to have...
And you need people with the skills to produce that content and communicate that content. So whether that's the your content of your business and you want somebody who is skillful in getting that message out there in social media and on your web and in other forms of media, that's what people who take our classes get to do.
What are the plans over the next few years for you to continue to evolve in terms of resources and curriculum?
That's a great question. We're opening a new studio in Book Arts and Alternative Processes, which are these historic processes. We're very excited about that opening on June 12th. This year, and we're expanding our courses in those areas, and we're expanding our courses in filmmaking as well. We have a new producing intensive track, which is really targeted to students who are studying communications or studying film theory who want to understand the business of film. How do you actually produce films?
Right.
We have writing and directing tracks. We see growth in that. We also see growth in our graduate degree programs, and we're working very hard in collaborations both with our MFA degree program, our professional certificate programs through the winter, and this new master's in education degree.
That's fascinating. Hey, Deb, as we conclude here, can you play us out with Nickelback Photograph?
You bet.
That'll be my theme music.
We
like to play the theme music for all of our guests. And
Meg, that's great.
This has been a little bit low. Yeah, Photograph right there. This has been so interesting for me personally. I support everything you do up there. I think Maine is known for many things, but creativity and the environment and personal express, all the stuff that you do is great. And so I'd love to have you come back sometime, and then maybe you can show me what some of the lenses do for my camera system that I have. And finally, please say hi to my good friend John Isaac up there this summer. He's a great photographer, and he's a better man, and I've enjoyed knowing him for years, and would love to have you come back sometime.
Well, I absolutely would love to do that. It's so much fun to talk to somebody that's so passionate about photography.
Photography. By the way, we've had Meg Weston. She's the president of Maine Media Workshops in College up in Rockport, Maine. Go to their website, mainemedia.edu. Go to their Twitter, MM Workshops. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. We'll be back next week. And now let's get a little more Nickelback, Deb. Thank you for listening.